The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
What's up, everybody? Glad you're on board for another edition of Everything You Need to Know. It's Kip Kiefer on the Tony Curry Radio Station Network, World Control, however we want to frame it. Tony Curry Radio, the gracious host of all of our broadcasts, and very much appreciate the opportunity to come to you each and every week. We touched on this topic the other day, and I have some what I think are really strong exchanges and things with my one of my fantastic broadcast partners. And I am so blessed to have so many contributing members of sort of my media team. One of them, the proprietor of this station, Tony Curry, our weekly show, Kiefer and Curry, gaining in popularity and always a blast to put together. We'll have another episode, of course, this week. But, you know, so I've got Tony, I've had Terry Quillian for 9 years, who is my partner in crime in a lot of news and political type shows. But also, she is the premier SEC football expert. She's totally consumed in it. She's a beautiful, brilliant woman who is completely and totally absorbed by everything SEC football. Yes, AKA a dream girl. We have a great time. We've had the same show running on radio now. This will be our 9th season coming up. Sunday morning show, the morning after. So I've got her on board, and you've heard from my son, Case Kiefer, who is a superstar, a rising star in his own right in the sports writing business, but also does a lot of media. So have a lot of really great assets and partners to kick around just about any topic under the sun. And Terry and I had some discussions in recent weeks about a variety of topics, and two of them, I'm going to play you clips from those programs today. One of them was on American exceptionalism, which I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, and how that term is misunderstood and used against Americans by those who want to tear down everything that's been built in this country, the greatest experiment in human history for a representative government of the people, by the people, for the people. And of course, the Declaration of Independence is started with the words, "We the people." So that discussion is going to be part of this. And I wanted to kind of give you a little bit of information I've learned of a topic that I think really is a tremendous example and really lives up to the whole term of American exceptionalism. This horrible war in Ukraine, which seems to be never ending, and I'm not going to talk about that in depth because I've got some pretty strong feelings, and I think I've vocalized those enough times here over the weeks here on the program. This is going to grind on for a long time. I don't think there's really a good guy in this. You would probably be surprised to hear me say that. Zelensky has been painted by the progressive media as some heroic figure that's standing in the main streets of Kyiv and has bombs falling all around him and is always under great threat and imminent doom. And he still stands as the bold, fearless leader of his people. Ukraine is a country that was extremely corrupt. It is intertwined in every aspect of everything we're watching here in our different struggle of political ideology. Donald Trump, of course, was impeached for suggesting to Zelensky that he release information to detail the nefarious activities of the Bidens. That's starting to come out from a House Representatives Committee, the Oversight Committee, of the activities of both Hunter Biden, his son, and Joe Biden. But again, that's not what I want to focus on. The point of bringing that up was what's happening in Ukraine has such amazing and terrible human consequences that people have had their lives totally uprooted. And I didn't even think of this, but it's something that in wartime that is tragic beyond all description, because like any place else, Ukraine with a major population had tens of thousands of children and other people, not just children, but I'm focusing on the aspect of children here, that were affected with all kinds of terrible diseases, heart problems, circulatory issues, cancer. There were thousands and thousands of children already being treated in Ukrainian hospitals and medical facilities and clinics for all of these things that are part of any society. And sadly, despite millions of dollars and research for seemingly hundreds of years, I guess there's been some breakthroughs and treatments and things, but it's a personal frustration of mine. And I know I look at things a lot of times from a perspective of a little bit of, I don't know, skepticism is a good word, that the business of raising funds for so much of this kind of research is sometimes more important than actually finding solutions. But that's kind of just a cynical attitude. I would like to see more results. And I think with all the modern technologies and all the brilliant talent that could be deployed, I think we should get to resolutions. I just don't know how good it is for business. And again, I concede that's a very cynical way to look at that, but it's just who I am. And I don't lie to you here on this show. I let it all hang out and let you know what I'm thinking. But the point is, I came across some information recently that I just found extraordinary. And I think it's a brilliant example of why this country, above all others, is truly exceptional. There were so many kids being treated for predominantly childhood cancers. And is there anything in the world more heartbreaking and absolutely sad and desperately terrible than a young child being stricken with cancer? It's bothered me my entire life just thinking of the unfairness of that and the absolute just devastation it is for not only that child's life, but for their family. I am so blessed to have two grown sons that have come through their childhood and now lived into adulthood and are living their dreams. It just breaks my heart to think about these kind of situations. And in Ukraine, like any place else, there were thousands of kids being treated for all kinds of different things. So imagine that happening in your family, and all of a sudden, bombs and missiles and threats of imminent destruction rains down on top of that. Can you imagine? I mean, you're already totally focused on desperately trying to get help for your kids and that are stricken. And now, not only do you have to worry about dealing with that, but it's heartbreaking to think that this Ukrainian-Russian war has resulted in 900 approximately different medical facilities, hospitals, clinics being either severely damaged or completely destroyed through this military engagement that really has no point. And again, I don't want to get into all of those reasons that the Ukrainian war is ridiculous. Russia, of course, is the bad guy in this. A lot of headlines this weekend about Vladimir Putin's lack of popularity and his vulnerability to maybe being toppled soon, because even the Russian people are not into this war. He's drafting people that are just regular guys that have store jobs, or one story came out recently of a liquor store clerk that was forced into the army, had no interest in fighting, and was actually about to be shot by a drone. He threw his arms up and communicated with sign language because he was on camera by the operators wherever they were. And he actually surrendered to a drone and followed it to where he could be detained. So there's so many stories like that. But I want to focus again on the kids in Ukraine. And there were some very unbelievable humanitarian efforts of people who recognize this need. And there's one story about how extraordinary the transportation of trying to get as many of these kids and these families out of the country into Poland, where they set up temporary clinics and triage centers. And one of those was absolutely 100% funded and set up and maintained just inside Poland from the Ukrainian border by an institution that I have the ultimate respect for, St. Jude's Children's Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. They deployed their forces, a lot of their brilliant medical people, set up this makeshift facility to assess different patients and decide what level of care that these children needed based on how far advanced their cancers were and other issues. And basically just were a clearing center to send them to hospitals in Europe or other facilities more close by that could address their problems, which were more, I should say less severe than some of the serious cases where immediate radiation and chemotherapy and a lot of the other treatments were needed. And the story was about a couple of different families, and there are hundreds of them right now in Memphis that were put on planes and sent to the St. Jude's Hospital in Memphis for treatment. And man, what a heartening and lightning story to hear that. And they interviewed some of those families, and they're so grateful. They're so overwhelmed with Americans' hospitality and how they've been welcomed and how their children are responding to treatments that will save many of their lives in a completely desperate situation. St. Jude's does great work. You've just barraged, I know, with thousands of different entities that are begging for funding. But if you're ever inclined, give a contribution and do it regularly if you can. The St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, one of the most extraordinary places I've ever seen. And the work they're doing in this particular initiative is one example of American exceptionalism. We are the most charitable, just giving people that you can possibly imagine. And that's the model that this country is made under, not all of this strife and dissent and arguing and different ways to go. That's a different conflict. I think the soul of the American people is best exemplified in what organizations like St. Jude and what regular Americans do in terms of rolling up their sleeves and doing anything they can to help the desperate and oppressed. So a big shout out to the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and their efforts. And I'm so glad I came across that story and heard the testimonials of these grateful parents and the kids themselves for what miracle has occurred in their life, that they now find themselves in a place they'd never heard of, on the banks of the mighty Mississippi at the St. Jude's Hospital, getting the treatment and the care that seemed impossible just a couple of months ago. Great, great story. So here's Terry and I's discussion on American exceptionalism. And then we're going to follow it up with another soundbite, a brief one, but I thought it was really compelling because that discussion had morphed into Terry and I talking about how this strange goings on in our country right now in terms of people kind of being on different sides of an issue. But there are a lot more commonalities too that develop in the midst of all this. And it's very, very interesting to see who, for lack of a better term, what strange bedfellows develop. We talked about several examples, but Terry really hit the ultimate example when she talked about her sister, the former Attorney General of the United States, Sally Quillian Yates, who is definitely on the other side ideologically of the discussion than Terry. But Terry talks about the family ties and their dynamic. And I thought you'd really like to hear that.
So Kip, it's really interesting when you look at learning from people that have different ideas about the world or different worldviews than you do. I got a big taste of this in a very personal way that is probably unique to me. And that is that at the very beginning of the Trump administration, my sister, Sally Yates, was named as acting U.S. Attorney General. And I have tremendous admiration for Sally. Sally is an amazing, amazing attorney. And she was an incredible prosecutor. I have to tell you, she was the darling of Louis Freeh and the FBI back in the day when I'm not sure the FBI was up to the stuff that they're up to now. In fact, when I was working for George W. Bush's office doing advance, anytime there were FBI agents on the trip, when they found out I was Sally's sister, they were so much more willing to work with me because they saw her as such a law enforcement history. So at any rate, she's, I don't know, a handful of days in, 10 days in to being the attorney general when Trump announces what was called his travel ban to 7 Muslim countries. Well, very famously, Sally held a press conference and announced that she as attorney general would not uphold that travel ban, which then led to very shortly after that, President Trump firing her. Now, this was a really interesting situation for me because at the time, Kip, you and I were working and hosting a conservative talk radio show. Also, I had worked for President George Bush in the past and worked for the advance office for President Trump. So this is an interesting position to be in. One of the things I learned from it that seems to be really different from the way we're looking at things today is that I can disagree with a person without them being a bad person. I can disagree with my sister's viewpoint on the travel ban while at the same time admiring her intellect and admiring her patriotism. I can look at Sally and see that I think she's a really good person who in this case, I know that her desires were good. I just feel that she was on the wrong path. And I'm sure that she feels like I have been on the wrong path for several years now on the conservative side. Nonetheless, neither of us see each other as evil or mean or stupid. We both appreciate that we're both well-intentioned. We just see a different way that we want to go about it. I feel that she was on the wrong path, but I feel that she was well-intentioned. So it's very different than the way we see today where we are demonizing people for having thoughts or feelings that are different than our own. And that goes along with me taking much more respectfully things that I hear and read from Russell Band, Robert Kennedy Jr., and others that I feel like have always been on the other side of the aisle from me.
So, Terry, I kind of want to change course just a little bit. I want to throw a term at you and get your reaction. If I say the words American exceptionalism, what comes to mind?
Ronald Reagan. I mean, that's like linked in my head with American exceptionalism is Ronald Reagan because he talked so often about America being the city built on the hill. And, you know, Kip, I think it's really interesting because I think there are different interpretations of American exceptionalism. The people that get really irritated with the term tend to be those who see it as meaning American superiority, even goes so far as Donald Trump talking about how he could see how the term American exceptionalism would be insulting. If he were Chinese, he would believe in Chinese exceptionalism. So he didn't think that was particularly helpful. And I think that's because as great as he was in many ways, Trump misunderstood really the origins of the term American exceptionalism. Because Kip, you know, it really goes back to John Winthrop, who is one of the original founders back in 1630. He's not even on the American shore yet. He's on a boat headed to Massachusetts Bay, and he delivered a sermon called The Model of Christian Charity, And in that, he talked about that we must consider that we shall be as a city built upon a hill. The eyes of all the people will be upon us. And Kip, I think that's how the American founders really saw themselves. And so they saw American exceptionalism, not as American superiority, but more as a case of providential obligation, as it were.
That is so fascinating, because it almost changes my entire mindset of that term. It's not a boast or a braggadocious vehicle. This is basically a call to arms for anyone who is embarking on this grand experiment of a formation of a representative government of the people, by the people, for the people. But it has biblical roots as well. I know, Terry, from Winthrop's discussion on that topic, mm-hmm. He cited biblical passages.
Right. And Matthew 5:14-16.
Incredible.
You are the light of the world. A city set upon a hill cannot be hidden.
It changes my whole perception, because this was not, again, a boast. This was basically setting of the bar. This was a standard. If we're going to embark on this, we need to be exceptional. This country needs to be exceptional. It's really fascinating that you framed it that way.
Well, the way it was really seen by the founders was that America is a gift from God, and it's up to us to take what he has given us and use it in the right way. And, you know, Kip, in the beginning days of the country, it wasn't just Americans who thought of the idea of American exceptionalism. It's really, I'd say Alexis de Tocqueville is one of the people most responsible for spreading this idea, because he talked about the position of America being, quote, quite exceptional. And de Tocqueville talked in the 1830s about how there were no precedents in history for what Americans were embarking upon, the democracy and the republic that Americans were created. And so if you look at it as a providential obligation, that's very different than seeing it as some kind of superiority. But Kip, I think a lot of the pushback on that has really come from people who don't necessarily misunderstand it, but who hate the original meaning because they can't stand the idea of America being founded on Judeo-Christian principles in the first place. I mean, Politico went so far in, 2018, they wrote an article about the rebirth of American exceptionalism, and they actually have the nerve to state that the term mainly came into use when used by Joseph Stalin in 1927. I find that ludicrous.
Oh, ridiculous. And, you know, Terry, this nation would not still be in existence had people not heeded that call for America to be exceptional. And there are examples by the bundles that I can cite right here that really emphasize that. And I think the best one I can come up with is what happened to this country when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. The few years preceding that, the war in Europe was already well underway. Churchill and the British were desperately trying to get the Americans to kind of end their isolationist period because the World War I experience had been so dreadful and cost so many lives and really kind of set the stage for the economic collapse, the Great Depression that our country was still dealing with. So the parallels of history are so remarkably similar when you hear about our intervention all around the world now, and people say, what about our problems at home? That's exactly what we were living in this era. But do you know, at the time of World War II breaking out in Europe, the United States military was so de-emphasized and the economic problems in our country was so bad that our military at that point only ranked 16th in the world as the most powerful force. There were 15 countries with superior military might than the United States. That's hard to even conceive. And So we had very little. We had few planes, few ships, very small forces at our disposal. And because of the events that occurred in those 5 years of the Franklin Roosevelt administration, he basically called America to arms, completely restructured everything we were doing in terms of manufacturing. All the factories got into the war-producing business. People that all of our young men were dispatched to go and liberate literally an entire continent and really defeat the greatest fascist movement and the biggest threat to our civilization and way of life. And yes, to our democracy, which is thrown around now like a loose term, but this was literally the saving of our democracy. And the fact that America, as a complete collective, women went to work in the factories, which had never happened before, the entire country mobilized, and within just a couple of years, we went from completely ill-prepared to the mightiest war machine in the world, and if American exceptionalism was not at play there, that could not have happened.
You know, and there are so many examples, Kip, that go back to the idea of providential obligation. For example, a lot of people don't realize this. America is absolutely the most generous country in the world. Our charitable giving, the last year I have statistics for is 2021. But get this, Americans gave $485 billion in charitable giving in 2021. And most of that is not coming from the one percenters. It's not coming from corporate gifts. It's coming from working people in the United States. Americans on a whole, if you average it out, donate 6% of their income to charity, which if you don't think it's a big deal, compare it with continental Europeans who like to sneer at Americans all the time. That is 7 times what the average continental European gives to charity. And I think whether Americans are seeing it as such, there is that feeling of providential obligation. It also goes back, Kip, to America being founded as a religious country, as a Judeo-Christian country. I personally wonder, as America religious belief is on the decline year after year, what we're going to see in terms of American charitable giving, what we're going to see in terms of decline in American exceptionalism altogether.
It's a fascinating subject. I really, the Europeans sneering at American exceptionalism. Well, they make an exception for that when we need to go bail their ass out. And and that's happened several times throughout history, both financially and militarily. So let's just cap this off by saying, folks, America is exceptional, has always been exceptional, and I believe is going to continue to be exceptional. Deal with it. How about that?
I love it. Perfect.
Well, that's a wrap on another edition of Need to Know. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Again, don't forget to listen to Kiefer and Curry this week on Tony Curry Radio. I'm Kip Kiefer. Thank you all for tuning in. Have a fantastic rest of your week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.